Hey everybody, welcome. This is Eric Mann. Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 90.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Eric Mann. I'm your host today. In the background, you already heard the Core Freighter Singers, where I was a member of Core. Say, get your rights back and don't be a Tom. Well, back then, the concept of not being an Uncle Tom was something that we took for granted, but now we're in a very difficult situation. 2 weeks ago, Illinois Senator Barack Obama announced he would form a Presidential Exploratory Committee, taking the first step towards running for the president in 2008. We'll speak today to Glenn Ford, the executive director of the Black Agenda Report, who joins us to analyze Barack Obama's politics and his potential candidacy. And then last week, 8 former Black Panthers, who you just heard on the news report, were arrested and indicted for a 1971 killing of a police officer in a case that was dismissed decades ago when the judge ruled that torture was used to gain confessions. Joining us today to discuss these arrests is activist attorney Kamau Carl Franklin. And I'm supposed to do a commentary. It's not going to be a long one. It's just going to be a very short introduction to Glenn Ford. And just maybe to try to talk about briefly the relationship of the three things in my introduction, the Core Freedom Singers, the Black Panther Party, and Barack Obama. The short answer is by getting rid of the Congress of Racial Equality and getting rid of the Black Panther Party, getting rid of Martin Luther King, getting rid of Malcolm X, and tracking down 8 Black men whose crime was to be in, I believe, the most militant and successful Black liberation organization in the history of this country, the Black Panther Party, is the government is paving the way for Barack Obama. All the women who fought in the women's movement must be physically sick to see Hillary Clinton be the reflection of what they thought was going to be a women's revolution. So here's our dilemma, that there once was a Black left. There was a Black left that would force on the Democratic Party some better choices, that would be a pivotal role in trying to end the war in Iraq, that would pressure a candidate like Barack Obama and perhaps run someone against him. But the significance of going after 8 prisoners, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more when I talk to a little brief introduction with Kamau Carl Franklin, is very tragic because apparently John Ashcroft decided when he became Attorney General that his goal was to track down every living Black Panther and to try to make life hell for them, because it's the killing of the Black dream and the Black history that's essential to the rise of the right. Today, we should understand the reactionary nature of shows like Cold Case, CSI, New York, Miami, L.A., Philadelphia, Detroit, and all the cleverness of opening up cold cases when you have to understand the main cold case that the system wants to open up is how to go back and track down the new left revolutionaries like myself, who are still alive, and try to kill us in our bed like they did to Fred Hampton. So with that introduction, hey Glenn Ford, one of the really best commentators I know, used to be co-editor of the Black Commentator, is now the executive editor of the online journal Black Agenda Report. How you doing, Glenn?
If they want to track down some Panthers, here I am.
Okay, well, if you come over my house or I come over yours, we can maybe cut their gas prices down, you know, and get their costs down. How in the world did we end up in our worst dreams with Barack Obama?
Oh, it started a long time ago and coterminous with the demise of the Panther Party, that is, during those years, the period when a certain segment of our population, black folks, were favoring their new opportunities, those who were prepared to take advantage of the opportunities that the death of Jim Crow, which we had brought about, provided. And they decided they would go off on their own into electoral politics, where they would only call out the people every 2 years or 4 years and call that a movement, or into corporate endeavors, in which they became objectively enemies of the movement, or into, well, whatever they pleased, and left the rest of us to rot or die. So it began some time ago. Barack Obama has been a long time coming.
Right, and I think he's a long time coming, but I think your excellent article, it begins, Barack Obama is a windblown politician. The junior Illinois senator avoids anchoring himself to any principle, lest his political sails fail to catch the slightest breeze, blowing from the left or the right. His political direction is always tentative, although his ultimate destination is never in doubt. He will be a formidable national presence, maybe even president. Rather than quoting from your excellent article on the Black Agenda, maybe I'll have a few quotes later, but why don't you tell us the politics of Barack Obama on the war and situate him, as you pointed out, which is at the end of Russell Feingold's candidacy, I believe, that there's now not one genuine anti-war candidate. Tell us a little bit about the manipulation of Barack Obama's politics on the war.
Not one except Dennis Kucinich.
That's correct.
We must mention him because no one else will.
That's right.
He is the anti-war candidate, and that's all we've got. And we know how far that will get us in this rigged system, but we have him, so let's give him his props.
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell us about the manipulation of one of the things I think was very striking in your article is how Obama said that he's not going to coddle the, he's going to get tough with the Iraqis. I mean, one of the things that's really crazy, which I'm sure you know, is you listen to these discussions about the failed experiment, should we put in 30,000 more troops, I even heard John Stewart, pathetic as he is, funny until he was up with, I don't know if you heard this, with Chuck Schumer, saying that he proposed 300,000 more troops in Iraq. That's what you get from Comedy Central. So this whole debate about Barack Obama saying, you know, it's not the right war at the right time, I supported it, but now I propose a phased but perhaps tentative but nephilic, you know, what's going on? What is Barack Obama actually saying, and what would you like our listeners to understand that he's not saying?
Well, I think it needs to be pointed out that this is not peculiar to Barack Obama. This whole conversation in which this big we is always invoked. What are we going to do about Iraq? What are we going to do about, hey, fill in the blank. What are we going to do? This built-in privilege, right to interfere with other nations. That is the ideological, political, cultural underpinning of this massive imperial aggression in which we are in the midst. Yeah, the entire conversation is about some American divine right to interfere with other peoples, which goes against civilization as we have come to build it. So I wanted to say that up front so as not to make this just a conversation about Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the great ingratiator. He fits into the conversation of those in power. He is very careful about choosing his words so as to say nothing that can be pinned on him. But I'm going to confess something here. I was a little bit unfair, not to Barack Obama, but to the readers in putting together that article. That is, the architecture of an article is you take an idea and you take it to its logical conclusion. And inevitably you leave certain things out. And it is not true that there is nothing behind Barack Obama. Barack Obama is a Democratic Leadership Council corporatist politician who has the advantage within the Democratic Party lay of the land of negating, they hope, a progressive and black opposition because of the fact that he is black and the veneer of progressivism. And so we have to peel away that veneer to show what he truly is, a person who carries the imperialist line, which really, when he says that there will be no more coddling of the Iraqis, is indistinguishable from George Bush saying just about the same time, 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago, that the Iraqi people owe a debt of gratitude to the American people, a debt of gratitude for 500,000 dead.
Well, Glenn, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that in your article, I want to read a quote where you say, "Ah, that green zone, the vast fortress in the heart of Baghdad, where the U.S. is building the largest embassy by far in the world. Leaving the green zone in U.S. military hands would be like a foreign occupier, quote, withdrawing from New York City while retaining fortifications stretching across all of Midtown Manhattan." In a book I'm working on, Revolutionary Organizing in the Age of Reaction, which has been the preface to many of my remarks for 15 years, but this is the year I plan to do it, one of the things that I think about is how imperialism not only is willing to violate self-determination, but essentially is willing to construct. It'll go into a country, whether it's Darfur or the Congo or Ghana or, in this case, Iraq, establish an imperial center, a military center. It could be one-tenth of the population, one-fifth of the population, if they can protect it. Create by flying in wealth and creating their own wealth, museums, operas, all surrounded by arms, where 90 to 95% of the people can either starve to death or kill each other, whichever they see free. So it seems to me that one of the things that is not being discussed, as you say, about challenging the imperial we, is even if the United States now pulled 90% of its troops out, its goal is occupation and its goal is oil. Is that not correct?
Its goal is world domination, and that's what sets this regime apart from previous U.S. regimes. It's more than a matter of degree. I think it reaches a level of some kind of quantum leap, a leap too far,
right?
Albeit, but a leap.
Right.
They have leaped into the abyss, but they did leap. I'm very appreciative of you talking about their modalities as they try to set up comprador regimes in those regions that they want to dominate. This was part of the leap too far, the reach too far that they did in Iraq. They had no social basis to create a comprador. In Vietnam, they had Catholic Vietnamese, who had been socialized under the French since the 1830s. As a comprador class, and there were millions of them. And in fact, the first Vietnamese president under partition was a French Catholic, and so was his superstructure. But that was not a viable option, and so the United States had him assassinated in 1963, right before Kennedy got assassinated himself.
Great.
And there followed a series of generals. But that comprador class did at least serve, this Catholic comprador class, as some kind of focus, as a center of social gravity for the regime. This does not exist. It also exists existed in Latin America. But this does not exist in Iraq. And that's one of the reasons that this adventure has come undone so quickly, because well, you see the state of confusion that they're in. Who is who? Who are the good guys? Who are the dependable actors? Now we see them scapegoating, humiliating, emasculating Maliki, their president.
That's right. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines, the 4 o'clock public affairs hour. The voice you're hearing is Glenn Ford, one of the editors, executive editor of the Black Agenda Report. We're talking about Barack Obama and Iraq, and as you pointed out, the absence of even the creation of a comprador bourgeoisie, because as they now said, Saddam Hussein was such a terrible dictator that after 30 years, everybody in Iraq hates the United States.
When you get statistics from Iraq that 60% favor armed struggle, you know that you're talking about, if not a majority, a very sizable chunk of the Shiites. We know we're not talking about Kurds. So you see that majorities even of the group that they thought would provide the social basis for the occupation, the Shiites.
Glenn, let's go back to Barack, though, because I think you're great on Iraq, but I want to talk about Barack for a minute. Is that okay? We'll go back to him.
I just felt remiss. I didn't want to center it if we're going to talk about Barack Obama's position on Iraq. I thought that we should talk about Iraq and how he goes along with that same imperialist line, that somehow the United States, as if carrying the white man's burden,
right,
is in a position to coddle Iraqis.
No, let me tell you.
Indistinguishable, and that is a commentary on Barack Obama, that he is mouthing the words that could have been written by Rudyard Kipling, and that is not something indigenous to the black political experience.
Well, one of the things, to go back to your quote, the Democratic Leadership Council, corporatist, negating a progressive and black opposition, to the degree you were trying to make a possible correction to your article, which, you know, I'm not sure if it needed one. I mean, I think you did situate Barack Obama in the work of Bill Clinton, of Hillary Clinton. But anyway, here's a concern I have. It's just trying to think out loud. One of the things that America has really hated is the angry black man, the angry black person, the absolute terror of white America, knowing it had a whip and do it for 300 years. So the whole question of the demonization of the angry black man, and at a certain point the hatred of all black men and all black people, but one of the sort of sad inverses of the civil rights movement to me has been the white majority's desire to find Bill Cosby, in search of Bill Cosby and now in search of Barack Obama. Is there some way that Barack Obama may very well win because white America understands that he's the negation of the black revolution that they still fear?
They understand that very well, and Barack Obama is the consummate politician and infinitely cynical in that he exploits that. He gives all the signals. The term that's bandied about in white circles is that Barack Obama does not have the baggage that other black politicians do. The baggage. What a terrible word. In other words, he does not carry the legacy. He does not hold up our flag. He does not fight our battle. He will not throw it in their faces. And therefore, he is the good black man, a sigh of relief that we can all forget about the past, which is where some people would like to put racism at, although it's absolutely contemporary, in anyone's face. He knows that. He's a cynical, cynical, cynical man, and he exploits that. In that sense, he is the white candidate.
And the question is, if he is the white candidate, or he is the greatest dream of the white racist, which I consider the majority of white people, not all by any means.
And I'm only speaking demographically in generalities, of course.
Of course you are. Of course you are. My question to you is this. If 90 to 95, I don't know if you read this horrible book by Chuck Schumer, which I'll never read, but read enough to know I don't want to read it, about something like How to Make America Vote Democratic.
And that's why we love you so, because you read these things that we can't have stomach to read.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, that's my job, right? So in there, there's this classic thing where he talks about reaching out to the white middle class. And I know you and I both, in our writings, have talked all about how the Democratic Party is desperately reaching out to the Reagan Democrat, that is to say, the racist Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chuck Schumer is saying, well, if we want to win the election in 2008, we have to understand that we already have the black vote, that this is the only group of people that every single class in the black community will vote 90 to 95% Democratic, regardless of who we send. So their goal, of course, is to find the white swing vote, not so much in the South, but in the Montana. Now they're talking about Arizona and stuff like that. So the question is, back to Barack Obama, if John Kerry can get 92% of the black vote, we have to assume that Barack Obama will get 98% of it. We also have to assume that large numbers of white moderate people will like him because, as he said, they said, gee, the Republicans didn't talk about Katrina. And he said, yes, that was a terrible omission. But he said nothing about Katrina. So he's not running on Katrina. But here's my question. Where is the black left going to be able to challenge Barack Obama in 2008?
We challenge him on the issues with no expectation, given the rigged nature of the system. That is, we'll have to choose between, or people will have to choose, not necessarily you or I, but people will have to choose between a Hillary or a Barack Obama versus a Republican.
Right.
But we know which way it's going to go down. There are no illusions here. What we are supposed to be about is building a movement that alters political behavior, not in betting on horses in their rigged race. That what our biggest obligation, our greatest mission, is to tell the truth. We must peel away all the layers from that onion called Barack Obama, because he is a danger to our body politic. I am most concerned, and I say this all the time, I am most concerned about the integrity of the black body politic, about the continuation of the black historical political consensus, which is the most consistently progressive consensus in existing among any group in the country. If that black political consensus deteriorates, is subverted, then it is, I believe, a death blow to progressivism in the United States, period. So in that sense, Barack Obama, to the extent that he represents a focus of confusion in black America, that can break that block vote of that block of progressivism, endangers all of the progressive forces in America.
Eric Mann, I'm on the phone. I'm talking to Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Report. Glenn, in an election between John McCain and Barack Obama, who would you vote for?
Well, we haven't even talked about whether I vote. I do.
Sometimes I'm skipping stages.
It doesn't hurt to vote. They don't make us go through too many problems most of the time to vote. That's not the main thing that we do. And, of course, I would not vote for John McCain. So if I were to vote that year, I would vote for Barack Obama, of course.
So would I. And I think what's important about what we're both saying, and the reason
I'm more concerned about getting a movement together.
Of course.
The political lay of the land.
Well, that's why what you're doing is so great. In other words, what I was trying to get to for some of our listeners, this is Eric Mann on the Voices from the Front Lines Hour with Glenn Ford, is sometimes we're confused, people are confused, like, well, who would you vote for? Hey, in a hot minute, I'd vote for Barack Obama against John McCain. But the day before and the day after and unfortunately right now, there's a tremendous danger. The danger is that the black left is very weak, the left is very weak, and that the incredible work that you're doing to just create a spark of consciousness so that young black students, for instance, to make it real, on a campus could say, Mr. Obama, we are going to vote for you, but what are you going to do about Katrina? Are you going to get out of Iraq? Are you going to end the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on crime, the war on gangs, the war in Iraq? We want you to do that. Will you do that? If we could develop black and Latino and Asian and white students, reading your material and putting less pressure on him, I think that's the most we can hope for in the next 2 years, is I hate to use the word, but for him not to have a whitewashed election.
In the next 2 years, maybe that's the most we can hope for. With a greater amount of time, we will get rid of the Barack Obamas because he is not trustworthy under any circumstances. But we can move him if we have a movement, and that should be our concern. That should be the focus of our activities. We should not waste our energies getting too deeply involved in this rigged game. But we must participate. On the other hand, I've always been assaulted by folks who say, "Well, why don't we just talk about doing a black independent political party or some kind of a marginal left political party?" And my answer is always, we can't even get a congressional black caucus or any state black caucus to really act like a black caucus. And if it were acting like a black caucus, as a progressive foundational black caucus. So how are we talking about making a political party when we can't even do that?
And Glenn, I'm going to have to leave you right there with that challenge. Let me do this, Glenn. I want to have you back on the show more often. You are one of the very most important, in my opinion, left voices and black left voices in the country. Black Agenda Report. How do we get it, folks? How do you get it, Glenn?
You get it by doing the www.blackagendareport. It's all on its face.
.com or .org?
Oh, that is .com.
.com. Can they send you any money for this?
Absolutely. They can send us all the money they want.
Okay. So anybody out there?
There are PayPals all over the site.
All right. We're going to take
a
short break. We've been listening to Glenn Ford discussing the candidacy of Barack Obama, Eric Mann. We're going to be back with our next guest, Kamau Carl Franklin, and the case of the 8 Black Panthers. Glenn, very nice having you on the show.
I really appreciate being your guest and our conversation.
Take good care.
Bye-bye.